A Radiance in the Gulag by Neolessa Dulnote. Chapter 14. No Home and No Work. The Harassment Continues. Why did they take away my cooperative apartment on July 8, 1985? I quote the minutes, number 45, of the representatives' meeting of the Vilnius Residential Housing Construction Cooperative, number 99, held July 8, 1985. Representatives elected, 18. Participating in the meeting, 16. Presiding over the meeting, P. Zbupfnis. Secretary of the meeting, G. Leonokyevius. Agenda. Whether to expel Felicia Yorles Dulnate, daughter of Jonas, from membership in the cooperative for infraction of Section C, paragraph 28 of the regulations of the cooperative, by systematically failing to fulfill her obligations to the cooperative. Discussion centered around the expulsion of Felicia Njolles Dulnate from the cooperative for systematic infraction of Articles C and E of the regulations of the cooperative. It was decided 1. To expel citizen Felicita Njolles Dulnate, daughter of Jonas, born 1938, registered at Objecto 27, 2, for infraction of Article 28E of the regulations for the cooperative by living regularly in another apartment, and of Article C by systematically breaking the rules of socialist communal living by not participating in cooperative social projects, does not clean the stairs, libels the cooperative and Soviet law. 2. To accept as a member of the cooperative Jonas Sadunas, contingent on submission of the appropriate documents and for consultation with the executive committee, assigning him to his sister's apartment. Voting for 16 representatives, no opposing votes and no abstentions. Signed, P. Zapovsnis, chairman of the cooperative. Of course, no one has proved that I have another apartment since no one knows where I live. I'm a free woman and come home whenever I please. My brother's wife, Mjaltje, participates in the cooperative projects and keeps the stairs clean. Where and how have I libeled the cooperative? These are vague, meaningless words. Likewise, with regard to Soviet law, there is no proof, but this the KGB should be concerned with, and not Zufzius. Here the poor man only gave himself away as a KGB agent. KGB investigator Gudas threatened to take away my apartment back in 1970, and in 1974 and 1975. KGB Major Viltos Pilis did so. What is an apartment worth compared to eternity? How joyously I repeat with St. Francis, God is mine, and everything is mine. I am the happiest woman in the world because God loves me, watches over, and protects me. Strange as it may seem, in December 1986, they called my brother from the executive committee and told him that I had not been expelled from the cooperative and not been stricken from the registry. Only the good Lord knows what that means, and that suffices. God has his plans, and they govern. There are human plans, and they do not govern. Another example of this truth can be found in the state's effort to deny me work. When I returned from exile in Siberia, the KGB would not allow me to take a job, not even as a charwoman in a store, so I obtained employment as assistant to the charwoman at the Church of Pebras. The providence of God makes all things work out for the best. In this job, the KGB was unable to keep me under surveillance. I used to work when there was work to be had. Many times I tended the fire beds, planted flowers, watered them, weeded them, and in the fall, I would gather up and burn the leaves fallen in the churchyard. I used to help the old sacristan to keep the church in order. I never had away from people who came to help out, or to see the pastor on business. After work, I used to take part in evening devotions, and afterward, I used to go to the sacristy to write down that I had done this or that chore. I paid income tax. Many warned me that I was not circumspect enough, since the KGB was looking for me so tirelessly. The vice commissioner of the Council of Religious Affairs, Jozanas, came to visit me when I arrived at the home of Father Doltnus Valiunkius, pastor of Pebras. He asked whether I really worked there and bemoaned the fact that I did not live in my own apartment. The pastor vouched that I was employed, and Jozanas left, having accomplished nothing. Going against Goliath in the Lord's name, little David will always be the winner. trusting in God, let us do everything we must. Without his permission, even a hair from our head shall not fall. God is our refuge and our strength. My years as a fugitive are witness to that. The KGB is looking for me not only in Lithuania, but in Latvia, Ukraine, the heart of Russia, and even Moscow. They have interrogated and investigated all of my acquaintances who ever wrote me letters during my exile in Siberia. The whole time I have been living in Vilnius, frequently and even daily visiting the families of parishioners of conscience under the surveillance by the KGB, going to visit one or the other church in Vilnius, helping to prepare my brother's little daughter, Maria, for First Communion and riding to work. So I wasn't exactly acting like a fugitive. God used to help me to avoid encounters with the KGB agents. Sometimes I would spot them before they saw me, and sometimes others would warn me, and I would disappear in time. There were many incidents in those years. One cannot write about them all. Only one thing is clear. God does not abandon those trusting in him. For everything, praise and thanks to the Almighty. Unable to settle matters with me, the comrades began to terrorize my brother's family. Here are a few fragments. After 8 p.m. on October 10th, 1985, my apartment doorbell rang. The stairwell was dark. To my inquiry, "Who is there?" someone answered, "Militia, please put on the stairway light." The electric switch was next to the doorbell, so that one could see who was standing at the door. They did not put on the light. The doorbell just kept on buzzing, accompanied by cries of, "Militia! Militia! Militia!" One of the neighbors went out on the landing and turned on the light. Now, one really could see that a uniformed militiaman was standing at the door. They opened the door. An official in the uniform of a militia lieutenant entered my apartment and, without even greeting or showing his official credentials, began shouting angrily in Russian, "Why wouldn't you let me in? What are you afraid of? Perhaps you have a lot of gold." "We were afraid of robbers. We've already been burglarized twice. If we don't see who is ringing the doorbell, we won't let you in next time either. Besides, even now, we don't know who you are, since we are seeing you for the first time." "I am an inspector from the militia," the visitor announced himself. "Not long ago, we were visited by another inspector from the militia. Who left us his visiting card with his name and telephone number?" my relatives answered. "On account of people like Sadunets, military inspectors have to be changed frequently." And suddenly he asked, "Is Nyola Sadunete here? When will she be here? Where does she work? Let her present her work permit. I'll come back in a week, and if Nyola Sadunete's work permit is not here, then I'll be coming back to see you every day." Then he demanded that they produce their papers, and taking out some sort of writing, he told them, "I don't have the right to show you this document," and he placed it on the table. While he checked their papers, my relatives had read that the documents had been written on October 3rd, 1985, addressed to the chief of the Department of Internal Affairs of the Spalio Raion, Military Lieutenant Colonel S.H. Boz. The document states, "The officers of Residence of Cooperative Number 9CJ inform you that Nyola Sadunleta has not been living in her cooperative apartment for 5 whole years, is not working anywhere. She was sentenced to 6 years for anti-Soviet activity." The document was typed, a whole page. It was signed by Chairman Petros Zepunius of Cooperative Number 9CJ. Poor Zepunius should be treated for hardening of the arteries, for if in the fall of 1982 he had two comrades check everyone's passports in our building himself, taking my passport, he ridiculed my incorrectly entered name. The passport had been issued after my exile, and they copied my name incorrectly. He also made fun of a little picture of Christ, which I had placed on the cover of the passport. All that I recall well, but he, the poor man, forgot. After checking the passports and telling me that everything was in order, he left. So it was 3 years and not 5 since Sapunius had seen me. He wrote that I was unemployed when he had my certificate of employment. Such is the Soviet truth. May God forgive him the lie, since this is the atmosphere in which he was reared. After checking their passports, the militia inspector inquired why I had not obtained employment in Vilnius. They explained to him that since I returned from exile in Siberia, I was refused employment, even as a cleaning woman in a store, and so I had obtained work as an extra worker at the church in Pavlos, and that I earned about 27 rubles a month after taxes. On the spot, they produced my income tax receipts for several years. They explained that my certificate of employment had been submitted to Zepunius on June 24, 1985, during a representatives' meeting of the cooperative, and that Zepunius himself had read the text of the certificate of employment to everyone out loud. All 13 representatives at the meeting heard it.
I need a new certificate of employment for Njola Sedunata,
the militiaman insisted. Our former inspector had Njola Sedunata's certificate of employment, and it should be in your files, they explained to the inspector.
But I need a new certificate of employment for Njola Sedunata, my visitor insisted.
To the question of how many times a year new certificates for employment can be obtained, there was no reply. After a brief silence, the inspector asked under what paragraph I had been sentenced.
We don't know, because the Mordovia camp administrator never returned Njola's copy of the decision to her, even though she requested it several times in writing. When, after her return to Vilnius from exile, she wrote a petition on June 11, 1981, to the chief judge of the Supreme Court of the LSSR, requesting a copy of the decision, Associate Judge M. Ignatius of the Supreme Court of the LSSR responded to her petition, saying that in cases of this nature, copies of the decision are not issued a second time. Finally, the inspector, after saying that they would be meeting more than once, left without saying goodbye. The conversation had lasted about an hour. After he left, my brother's 9-year-old daughter, Maria, ran up to him saying, Daddy, that militiaman yelling outside the door! Militia, militia, militia! Scared me so much! Maria threw her arms around me and asked, What would they do if they caught you too? I love you very much and pray for you every evening.
Be calm, Maria. The prayer of innocent children is powerful, and so only the best will happen to me, I replied. The fear disappeared from her wide dark eyes, and she smiled. The poor inspector terrorized and threatened my brother and his wife several times more, but he also decided to frighten Maria. On November 1, 1985, my brother was admitted to the hospital. The diagnosis was tuberculosis of kidneys and eyes. In November of that year, when my brother's wife was working until 9 p.m. and her daughter, Maria, was home alone, the militiaman would come and bang loudly on the door, shouting to her to let him in. After the first scare, the girl's mother came home from work to find that her daughter had locked herself in the bathroom, terrified. Maria had told her that the militiaman had come, shouting loudly and banging on the door, so she had hidden in the bathroom, so that if they put the light on in her room, they would not see her. Another time, her mother found her sitting under a desk. Next to her stood a table lamp, and Maria was doing her homework. Although her eyes were full of terror, she smiled at her mother and said, Mommy, I've become tougher. I'm not afraid of that militiaman. Let him bang on the door and shout outside. The third time, there was a woman with Maria, who helped to remodel the apartment. When the militiaman began banging on the door and shouting, the woman opened the door and let him in. The militiaman assailed the woman.
Don't you know that anti-Soviet people live here? Why are you painting the walls of their apartment?
The woman calmly replied that, to her, all apartment walls are the same. After that, the militiaman inquired where my brother was, saying that he had to go for interrogation. My brother was transferred from the Vilnius City 2 Hospital on November 27, 1985, to the clinic of the Tuberculosis Research Institute, where he was treated until January 8, 1986. From January 9, 1986, he lay in the Republic of Tuberculosis Sanitarium of Kalvolka, from which he was discharged on June 20, 1986. The definitive diagnosis was tuberculosis of the kidneys and left eye. This was the result of constant colds while he was undergoing compulsory labor in construction. Let all these sufferings be dedicated to the greater glory of God and good of souls. For their part, my brother and his wife have commended themselves completely to the will of God. Although my brother is presently employed at the Vilnius Interrayon plant quarantine station as a technician, with a monthly salary of 105 rubles, he must still endure harassment on my account. Chairman Zupius of the Cooperative No. 99 would not desist, assiduously carrying out orders from his KGB comrades. For example, on September 29, 1986, during a meeting of representatives, Zupius attacked my brother for not bringing me. Njola is not a child so that I should have to bring her. Besides, you evicted her from the cooperative 14 months ago. Zupius then said, Njola Sedunata must reclaim from the state bank any payments she has made for her cooperative apartment. My brother requested that Articles 30 and 75 of the February 28, 1983 decree on the LSSR Council of Ministers be read. Zupius read Article 30. The balance of the assessment is to be turned to a member resigning from the cooperative when the new member accepted by the cooperative pays his assessment. They then handed my brother a statement saying that 6,148 rubles and 86 kopecks had been deposited in the state bank. Zupius said, We will give her a month's time. If during that time Njola Sedunata does not reclaim from the state bank the sum she is paid in, her money shall be transferred to an escrow account. If within 3 years she has not reclaimed her money, the deposit of 5,040 and 0.5 rubles will revert to the state. Moreover, he angrily demanded, "Where are you hiding, Yola Sedunate? Where is she living? I haven't seen her for 5 years. The residents of the cooperative haven't either." My brother asked, "If no one has seen Yola Sedunate for 5 years, then why did you stand at the board meeting of July 8, 1985, and say that she was libeling the cooperative and the Soviet law? Who heard Yola libeling the cooperative?"
"Yola Sedunate transmitted libelous material over Vatican radio," Zapoikis insisted.
"Did you hear the material?" To my brother's question, Zapoikis replied, "Everyone heard how the Vatican radio libeled our cooperative." "And where is the proof that Yola gave them that information?"
To this question, the secretary of the meeting, G. Lovenkis, replied, "If we have libeled Yola Sedunate, then sue.
You have expelled Yola from membership in the cooperative unjustly because she has no other apartment," my brother explained. "Can you produce the address where Yola is living permanently? Without her address, you were not supposed to expel her from the cooperative."
To this, Zapoikis replied, "Yola is traveling all over the Soviet Union. That is why she's not living with you."
"But there is no stated time limit for a member of the cooperative not to inhabit an apartment," my brother retorted.
Zapoikis was silent.
It would be interesting to know whether it was from the KGB that Zapoikis learned that I was traveling all over the Soviet Union, since he stated that for 5 years neither he nor any members of the cooperative had seen me. Witnesses like poor Zapoikis testifying in Soviet courts against prisoners of conscience say what the KGB wants them to say. Such is everyday Soviet reality. From letters, of which I receive fewer and fewer, barely one or two a year, I've learned that most of my acquaintances who have suffered in the gulag for the truth have been arrested again. The good God knows that the condemnation weighing on the world today can be removed only by sacrifice, and he chooses those whom he loves, designated before the ages. The suffering prisoners of conscience are the salt of the earth.